Jupiter Broadcasting presents this program in stereo. Episode brought to you in part by GoDaddy.com.
This week on the Linux Action Show. Today marks an action day in history. We review Ubuntu 10.10 on October 10th, 2010 at 10 a.m. Has the desktop Linux quality bar been set to a whole new level, or just received some simple polish? We give you the details. The future of MeeGo came into question this week, but our gut tells us everything is going to be okay. We discuss. Plus, we share our thoughts on why Amazon App Market for Android could be a great thing. Plus so much more. All this week on the Linux Action Show.
And welcome to the Linux Action Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is season 14, episode 1, the inaugural episode of season 14. My name is Brian. That guy is Chris.
Hey there, Brian. Jaguar is the world's most powerful scientific supercomputer.
Say that again. Jaguar?
Jaguar.
Jaguar, Brian. You mean?
Yeah.
You mean Jaguar.
Have you seen this thing? One of the listeners in the chat room before the show, I had a whole another Runs Linux all lined up, and I was like, totally going to cover this. But no, he sent this our way. It has 220,000
Opteron cores. Before we go into how awesome the Jaguar is, let's talk about the thing that you were going to,
cover. Yeah.
Because if you remember the last episode, which was season 13,
it
episode 10.
It was bad,
10,
man.
It was awesome. We had these autonomous flying robots and everything.
Lasers.
And I come in here and sit down this morning, and Chris is like, well, I've got a Linux. How did you describe it?
This is the GenTouch, dude. And
No. He said specifically, now this week we got this thing.
Yeah, I was not too excited about it.
Yeah, I'm like, well, that's not going to do, man. We got to find something different. So we got the Jaguar.
Yeah, I like this GenTouch because it's an Android tablet that snaps into a netbook housing. We've seen that before.
Yeah, we've seen it before. It's cool.
Say on this thing's going to be around $350 with a gigahertz
CPU.
That's
not bad.
I know. And this one that we're looking at is called the Espresso Doppio or something like that.
It looks cool.
A little more expensive with a 10-inch screen and 160 gigabyte hard drive capacity. Supposedly Android 3.0 with a 3-megapixel camera. That all sounds really good, and they're going to have multiple different SKUs of it. The buzz is bad, though.
Really?
Buzz is they're built cheap.
Oh.
So
I mean, it's not that expensive. What are you going to do?
I want to give us a fist bumple right here. A little fist bumple.
Boom.
We're doing Ubuntu 10.10 review today.
Uh-huh.
We're recording on October 10th, 2010.
At 10 a.m.
At 10 a.m.
Yeah.
That's meant to be.
It's 10.
And all of that adds up to 42 day.
Well, except unless you count in the whole 10 a.m. thing, then there's an additional 10.
Oh.
And then who knows what
it is. I was choosing
to
discard.
To tell.
Because, you know, I'm trying to get on board with something, and 42 day is pretty geeky. I even wore a 42 shirt.
You
right?
did.
I did. I
you
wore
did.
It. Yeah.
You've had that shirt a long time.
I have.
I think you've had it since high school.
Almost. Yeah, I have. Almost.
You've had it as long as I've known you.
So 42 day, Brian, if you want to do things to celebrate, you can do things like make a cake with friends.
Yeah, that's what it says, 42day.com, spelled out.
Yep.
That's what it says. That's one thing you can do on 42 days, make a cake with friends.
You can also generally have a splendid time on 42 day, Brian. So, you know.
Man, I love how hardcore 42 day is. I mean, it's hardcore.
Yeah. Make a cake, and they also have a crazy recipe with 42 different ingredients and things like that. Now, I got a couple of different Android picks. We've got a massive Ubuntu review coming up. We've got some crazy news coming up. Before we talk about all of that, though, Brian,
yeah,
I want to talk a little bit about Danica Patrick and her GoDaddy.com.
Is that what's great about GoDaddy.com is if you go there right now, you can see Danica Patrick.
I do like that aspect
of
it quite a bit.
Not necessarily. Sometimes it's not Danica Patrick.
It's true.
Sometimes it's someone else.
Hopefully they know now by Sunday mornings they want to put Danica Patrick
up there. You put Danica Patrick on there on Sundays because that's part of Sunday, ladies and gentlemen, is Danica Patrick at GoDaddy.com.
Yeah.
The other thing that's nice about GoDaddy.com is you can register domain names and get servers there. That's pretty cool, too. They can have servers also that run Linux.
As a matter of fact.
GoDaddy.com runs Linux. Now, here's the thing. That Jaguar server, massive server we talked about, it has like 80 billion Opteron cores. I betcha GoDaddy has more.
Oh, and you know what? I bet even the world's most powerful supercomputer registered their domain with GoDaddy.com.
You know what? I bet you they did. And when they did, they typed in the word Linux at checkout and saved 10%. Or they said, you know what? We're going to actually host our entire supercomputer at GoDaddy.com and just type in Linux 20 and save 20%.
Oh, so they probably saved 20% off their supercomputer hosting.
That's right. And 20% off of a supercomputer is a lot of 20%.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
That's your 20% really gets you something there.
At GoDaddy.com.
All right. Thanks, GoDaddy, for sponsorship of the Linux Action Show. I got two Android picks. Two of them.
Two of them? You're gonna use all your Android picks up to keep you at this rate,
man. No, man. It's crazy. It's crazy town. I mean, I had to pick. So did you see?
It sounds like crazy
town. You know Skype was out for Android, but it was a Verizon Wireless exclusive?
Yeah.
That's changed now. That's not one of my picks. But I will just say...
Now, isn't it still limited to Wi-Fi, though?
Yeah, but you can, if you download, there's a...
Unless you cheat.
There's a really... Yeah, there's like an APK you can download that enables 3G calling.
That seems sketchy.
It does, right? Because then you don't get marketplace updates. You can't just update your application through the marketplace. So
I don't know about that.
Why use Skype over 3G anyways, though?
You know what?
Because then you have 3G service.
On the Nokia N900.
Dude, well, it works
including
on...
Including video. Skype video over 3G, fully supported, out of the box, integrated into the phone,
You know what's crazy
fantastic.
Is Skype on Verizon is 3G only, no Wi-Fi. So it's flopped on
what
the...
Is that?
It's exclusive deals and stuff.
So
here's
so lame.
So I think that's lame. So I'm not making Skype one of my picks.
That's totes lame.
Here's what I'm picking. I got two different apps. One of them is like is kind of a neat deal if you're going to spend a lot of time inputting data into your Android. Maybe you're hacking it. Maybe you just want to stay in.
You might be hacking it.
You might. Or maybe you want to just stay signed into an instant messenger, something like that. This is Share Keyboard. And what it does is it lets you choose. It lets you use your keyboard, a little web page, and it sets up a web server daemon, and then you connect to that, and you can type into that, and it inputs onto your Android. Yeah,
I dig that.
And you just toggle it on by saying, all right, I want this to be my input method, because on any Android device, if you hold down in the space where you're typing, if you tap and hold, the input method selection comes up, and you can choose keyboards.
Yep.
And this is one of them. It's called Share Keyboard. You select that. Bam. Now you're typing. What's really neat is it gives you, at the bottom of your Android screen, it gives you the URL that you need to go over to start typing.
I like it. That's actually a pretty cool way to do it. That, to me, is much cooler than going the whole like Bluetooth keyboard route.
Yeah, because then you can just take advantage of wherever, whatever.
Plus,
you
know. I don't trust them wireless keyboard. I'm always afraid that someone's going to be hacksering my keyboard or something.
They could be, dude.
I don't like having my keyboard
sniffing
on the
your
network.
Transmissions.
It's like when in season one of the remade Battlestar Galactica, they were all like, oh my gosh,
we don't have networks.
We don't network.
We don't network.
We just run cables between all of our crap, and that's done.
Yeah.
That's how I am with my keyboards. No exceptions.
There you have it. One last Android
I'd like to
pick.
Take a hard stance on the show.
I like that, dude.
Yeah.
People tune in for those hard line opinions.
That's all I got for this episode. It's just that I really like my keyboards plugged in.
Passionate.
Yeah.
The last pick, I'll just make mention of it because I think it's kind of an interesting tide change, is Adobe Air is actually out for Android. Now, we talked about this a while ago, and I think we both said, yeah, we'll see that in a few years, but they actually got this thing to market.
It's out, and it's great.
They got it like out in like under 6 months.
It works fantastically well.
Your opinions on this, sir?
It works great. This is awesome. So all the things that you guys have probably been hearing, all the FUD from Apple about how Flash games and apps don't work on touchscreen devices because of mouse pointer issues and they eat up your battery life, something fierce. It's all crap. It works great. It works fantastically well. And the amazing thing is, if you have a decent Android device, like one of the more faster-er ones, perhaps, the games run great.
Oh,
stuff that runs good,
cool.
You know, normally in a web page runs great in this.
There's now, a pretty big catalog of Air apps too already.
And the downside though is no full flex. So if you want an app like Twirl, no luck. You can't run something like Twirl on this. But
so it's not a straight port of Air apps.
It's Air, but Air is not flex. So a lot of the Air applications on the desktop use flex. So those applications you can't do.
Is flex like their QT kind of UI.
Yeah, exactly. Flex is a big SDK that allows much, much more robust applications. Mm-hmm. But if it's just straight Flash, if it's just like a Flash game,
I see.
It's going to run great. Yeah.
So what do you think with Illumination Software Creator and things like that? Doesn't this just make another way to get apps on Android?
It's fantastic.
That's what I thought,
I mean,
too.
The more options, the better, right?
And now, I was expecting performance to be really bad because isn't everything in Android essentially under a layer of emulation to begin with, at least in a virtual machine?
For the most part, yeah.
And then you run this, which is also essentially a virtual machine.
Yep.
Seemed like that would be virtual machine on top of virtual machine. Performance would be awful. But one of the apps that's out already for Air is like a Netflix queue manager.
Yeah.
Man, it's not like the most amazing queue manager ever, but it worked. It worked fine.
Dude, from what I've seen, performance is good.
That's right.
It's really good.
It's cool.
I'm actually really impressed. I wasn't expecting to see this out until like the end of the year. Until like December time.
Same. I was surprised.
So this is really, really cool. Props to Adobe for getting it out there. The more platforms that people can hit developing in one time for something like
that's
Air
always good.
Or something. That's awesome.
I'm not like a huge fan of Flash or Adobe Air. I don't really have a strong sense either way. I find it to be convenient mostly from an end user's perspective. What I did find really interesting is I was watching TV last night. I don't watch a lot of commercials, you know, DVR and stuff like that. But I was just letting it go last night, and Verizon Wireless had a commercial up for the HTC Droid Incredible, and they're like HTC Droid Incredible with Adobe Flash. Like, whoa, really? That makes the commercial now?
Well, dude, it's a big deal.
I guess so. I had no idea.
I mean, still one of the biggest knocks for people buying like an iPhone or
that's
an iPad is you still, I mean, realistically, how do you possibly surf the web without Flash?
It does seem like a missing component.
It totally does.
But, yeah. All right, well,
it's cool.
I'd be curious what people think.
I dig it. You know, and again, I don't know how often people are actually going to download Air apps.
Yeah, that's the thing,
it might take off. Maybe. You know, Farmville get ported.
Yeah, like I checked it out just to check it out.
Yeah.
But I don't really have any intention of...
But I like that it's there.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Same. All right, Brian, let's do the news.
What's new in the news this week?
All right, Brian, the top story on the news docket for this week. Migo's chief dude over at Nokia stepped down this week.
Yeah.
Oh, this makes us sad, Brian.
Yeah.
So the VP in charge of Migo devices over at Nokia has resigned. This comes from the one of the newspapers over in Finland where Nokia is located. And when this first came out, there was a lot of, I don't know if you want to call it FUD, but there was a lot of scuttlebutt about, well, what does this mean for the future of Migo?
Yep. I mean, come on. It shakes you up.
It does a little bit.
When the man in charge steps down, you start to second guess.
Also, within just a short period of time, they've had another guy leave from one of their head execs left the company. They've just had a lot of shakeups recently, and both of them happen to be sort of related to the whole Migo area of Nokia's product development.
It does seem that way, doesn't it?
It's kind of scary.
It's super scary because, I mean, come on. There's a lot of hopes being pinned on Migo right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Migo is kind of the... I mean, yeah, we have Android. Android's great. And Android sits on top of Linux. But Android's not really Linux. You know what I mean? Like, Android is Linux.
Yeah.
It's running Linux. But Android is as much Linux as, like, TiVo is Linux. You know what I mean? It's Linux, and we can go around, and we can talk about how awesome we are, because it's Linux.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're not going to drop down to a bash shell. At least not that often. You can.
You can.
You can. But it's kind of, it's not really what it's meant for.
Mm-hmm.
But Migo... It's basically just a Linux desktop shmammed into a phone.
Right. And
it's the Linux nerd phone. And so we're hoping it's going to be big.
Yeah.
We want it to be big. MAMO never made it.
The part of the timing issue, too, is that Intel came out this week and said, hey, we're not going to have any hardware ready for Migo devices until 2011. Nokia came out and said, we're going to have some sort of announcement Migo-related in December of 2010.
Yeah.
Now, that could just be an announcement for a product for 2011.
It kind of sounds like it is.
But it does sound like Nokia is still committed to Migo.
They're not giving up on it.
They say that his position they're going to fill.
We've seen pictures of the proposed devices, the N9, I believe it's called.
Yep.
And it looks good. I mean, it looks good.
Yeah,
it looks like it'd be a nice phone. It looks like a phone that I would buy. So I'm all for that. But, you know...
I think we covered it last episode
or the one before, something like that. It looks fine. I just really hope that things work out. You know,
yeah.
I don't want to see it go downhill. I don't I don't want to see this, you know, go the way of so many other cool projects that just never made it. I mean, we've seen a lot of Linux-based phone things.
We've played
over
with
the years.
Some of them.
Remember the Neo, the Freerunner
Neo?
That's
what it was. I was trying to remember the name.
That guy was really cool, but it just never it never made it. It never caught on. Uh-huh. It never got the interest of the public or the big manufacturers. I hope that Mego really kicks off.
Here's why I think it's still going to happen. Is I think Intel really wants to prove that they can build x86 chips to work in this mobile handset spot, and they need a platform to showcase it.
They do.
They need Mego to do that.
They need a platform that they can control to optimize it enough to show that their chips are going to work.
And Intel's already begun working on an ARMed x86 translator for people to port their applications.
Yep.
So they're really banking on it. I think Nokia is going to step up.
I hope so.
This was like a house cleaning of some of the Nokia people who weren't really on board with the vision. It doesn't seem like these people would be that.
Maybe they've just been there a long time and it's time to move on. I mean, I've been in plenty of projects where it's like, okay, we're shipping in 6 months. Awesome. Everybody's nose down. And then like one of the VP leaves.
Yeah.
It's not that big a deal.
You move on.
There's more than one guy working on Mego. You know, there's probably hundreds of guys working on this thing throughout a variety of organizations.
And the community itself.
You know, one guy leaving, two guys leaving, hell, even three guys leaving. Not that big a deal.
Well, and if you recall, it was, 2-3 months ago, they picked up Peter Skillman, the one of the original designers of WebOS, who's now working in the Mego division. So he might even be the right guy to step up and take this guy's spot, for all we know. He could be that guy.
It's very possible. I thought that guy was more on the UI design.
Yeah, he was. But
they're filling the positions. They wouldn't be filling those positions if they thought that they were gonna ditch it. So Mego's around. I hope this doesn't create any sort of stumbling blocks. I have my fingers crossed. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see this fail. You know, Mamo didn't make it, but I loved it. Moblin didn't make it, but I liked it. And they smashed the two together. So I kind of want that one thing to make it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
That resulting one smash
And it looks
project.
Like it could, what we're seeing so far. In fact, you know, if you want to get your hands on sort of the early stages of Mego, they're calling it 1.0.
Yep.
It's going to ship in Fedora 14. So you could go grab the Fedora 14 beta, and you could get your hands on Mego.
You can run with it right now. There's a SUSE side of it you can play with too. But realistically, you know, just go to the Mego site. You can grab the download for it. It's no big deal.
There's live CDs too.
It's worth trying out. It is pretty cool.
Brian, I wanted to point people over for the next story on the news docket. Download Squad did a great write-up this week. It's about a site called Pengu Spy.
Pengu Spy.
And what it really is it's actually a pretty slick directory of games that work under Linux. It's got a lot of Facebook integration too, so you can find your other friends who liked games and things like that. But what it really is you got your categories, you got previews and different stuff. A lot of them have videos. It's very Flash heavy, so you have to have Flash, which I realize not everyone on Linux always
has
Flash
loaded.
Most of you do. But you find your game. Everything, like Minecraft, which is one of the later games, to some older games I didn't even know were available on Linux, finding them on the site, Pengu Spy.
That's actually really cool.
It's making me want to do another gaming episode, so we might do that in a few episodes.
We got
a lot of stuff planned for this season.
Hell with it. We're doing a gaming episode soon.
Soon. Well, you know what else we're doing soon is we're eventually going to do an Arch review.
I'm running Arch right now.
No!
Yeah.
No! Oh, no! See, I was trying to remember when Fedora 14 comes out. Because
I'm ahead of you.
If we got time,
I
got to get loaded then.
Hey, Chris, guess what I'm running at home?
What?
Fedora 14.
You are screwing with my head
Hey,
now,
ladies
sir.
And gentlemen.
You are screwing with me.
I just like to point out who is super prepared right now. This guy. This guy right here. Not that guy. Not that guy at all.
No. I've been running Ubuntu 10.10. I was staying focused, Brian.
Right over there. The chat room agrees. Brian is an overachiever.
My eyes were on the bizzle. My eyes were on the bizzle, Brian.
The bizzle, huh?
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
I don't either,
Brian. Yeah, no idea.
Anyways, I'll put a link to Pengu Game or Pengu Spy.
PenguSpy.com.
Yeah, check out
really cool.
I know, right? I know. Check out some of the games on here. They just make you want to stop and play video games.
And you know, I
think it's the weather.
The great thing is, so we've got this, and you know, the great thing is, we don't have a lot of games available on Linux, but games that are just a little bit older tend to run great under Wine. So I've been spending a lot of time and a lot of money at goodoldgames.com or GOG.com at Good Old Games, because like 90% of those games run perfect.
Some
under
of them
Wine.
Probably run in DOSBox too or something, right?
A lot of them do run in DOSBox. So I mean, it's great. It's great.
I didn't even know there was an old submarine game for Linux.
I had no idea.
So I think I know what I'm doing after the show.
You're probably going
to
play that.
I think I will.
You probably are.
All right, Brian.
Hey, Chris. Yeah. Want to play that after the show?
I got one last story for this week's news docket because it's kind of a mind-numbing one. Because
we got a review to do.
I know it.
We got a chop chop.
So let's talk about this last story on the news docket. Amazon to roll out their own Android app store. What do you think of this? We're going to have another app store on Android. It's going to be managed by Amazon with their own DRM wrapper, with their own acceptance policies, with their own review policies, their own app, all that kind of stuff. What do you think? Multiple app stores on Android, good or bad?
I have no idea. It's weird.
You think so?
It's weird.
But just not, so you don't have like an immediate, this is awful reaction?
No.
Okay.
No, well, see, here's the
thing. Surprised, actually. I thought you might hate it.
Here's the nice thing. So if you look at, like, let's say Kindle, right?
Yeah.
So Amazon's got the Kindle DK. Whoa, we got an infinite loop going on.
Whoa,
that was cool. We've got a Kindle SDK,
yeah.
Right? So you can make apps for Kindles.
Okay.
Which I'm part of the beta on.
The KDF?
The KDK.
Oh, not the Klingon.
I don't know that they have, actually made it public yet. But part of it is you can sell content to Kindles in a like a recurring model. So you can have a subscription model for it. The Android marketplace doesn't have that.
True.
So now the nice thing about Amazon is they know how to sell stuff, and they know how to do good profit sharing and good affiliate work and all that sort of thing. Amazon has tons of experience in that. Google's model needs work.
Mm-hmm.
It needs help. It's not fantastic.
Right.
So I don't know what I feel about having multiple stores on there. I mean, there already are multiple stores on the Android side of things. I mean, there's a couple of adult themed stores.
It's true. And Verizon, I think, is either will be or has been working on their own store.
Yep. And a lot of the handhelds, like I think even Arcos has their own little thing.
Yep.
And so, really at this point, the Android marketplace, as in the whole ecosystem, is already fragmented to kingdom come. So what's one more? And if one more is going to join in, why not be Amazon?
I have read, and I have not read it from anything that Google said directly, but I've read that Google always intended for Android to have multiple stores. They thought, just like they think that having multiple browsers and having the open
choices is good.
They think it fosters competition. And I will say this. I think Amazon could run a better store. I think Amazon will lean closer more towards Apple as far as they're probably going to have a bar that if an app falls below that bar, it's going to get rejected for various reasons because I think they're going to want the Amazon App Store known for having good apps.
Yeah.
They're not you go on the Android app marketplace now, and Angry Birds, one of the best-selling Android apps of all times, is right next to free MP3 ringtone download that's a total copyright violator.
Yeah.
And there's just this really weird, total Wild West thing going on in the Android app market, which is awesome. But you also almost wonder if Google has been leaving it intentionally kind of unmanaged so that way somebody would step up and do this.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe Google, a multi-billion-dollar company, can't find the resources to tidy up their app store directory.
No. You hire one guy and it's done after a couple of weeks. It's no big deal.
Yeah, so I think that might be intentional.
And the great thing is, multiple app stores is good for developers to earn money.
That's what I was going to ask you.
If you think about it, one of the problems with those app stores, and it's horrible on the iPhone side of things, if you make a great, let's say, game. You make a great game and you put it on an iPhone and you get into the Apple App Store, unless it jumps up to the top of the charts right away, you're sunk.
Oh,
you're not going to earn any income.
That's one make or break it.
The great thing, if you have the Google store and the Amazon store and like an Arcos store and a Verizon store, you've got all these different stores, you've got 4, 5, 6 chances to get into those top 10, top 50,
true,
top 100 lists.
True, good point.
And you get more press, you get more exposure, you get it kind of evens the playing field out.
The other thing I like about it is, a lot of people out there are concerned about their privacy with Google, and they don't want to set up with a Google checkout account and associate their credit card.
Yeah.
The Google Marketplace hasn't yet integrated PayPal as a payment option or hasn't reintegrated.
Yeah.
Amazon, a lot of people are comfortable, already have account information set up with Amazon.
Dude, seriously.
It could be really cool. Also,
everyone's bought something from Amazon.
Like you mentioned earlier, Amazon has a great affiliate network, so maybe when we do Android app recommendations, I could include an affiliate link so you could help support the show. So I'm keeping an open mind, but I am really concerned about fragmentation at the same time. Because right now, if you release an app on the iPhone, there is one place that I need to go find that app.
Yeah.
What if you release Illumination Software Creator Mobile Edition and it's on Android, but it's not in Verizon Store, but it's in Google Store, and it's going to be in Amazon Store in a week, and all this different stuff.
So what?
Yeah, okay. Well, I also heard
the
mention. Confusion for the consumer on where to find it.
You know what that means, though? Consumer's going to look around.
Yeah.
And the result of consumers looking around to find stuff is buying more stuff.
True.
So
true.
For developers, I mean, which is where I look at it from, this just means more sales.
Also, I heard mentioned that their terms of service leaked, and I'll link to this in the show notes. It looks like they might offer developers the ability to pre-list as like a pre-release, pre-order kind of a thing.
That's cool.
Right?
Yeah.
So you could start building the PR early and have people just pre-order. And then once the application's released into the marketplace, the Amazon app, theoretically, which is auto-download it. Yeah, and install it, and
that's
boom,
cool.
You got it.
That's way cool.
That could be really neat.
Mostly, you know, I'm looking forward to the possibility of subscription models. Because honestly, you know, I've looked at the possibility of doing some apps with a subscription model, like an MMO. Let's say you make an MMO. It's really difficult to make an MMO for handhelds right now because you end up having to have people download it, maybe have it free, and then log on to your website and then create an account.
Yeah.
It's really complex for an end user, so the MMOs haven't been doing well. But what if you could have a $1 a month recurring charge right from the store?
That would be
neat. Don't have to set anything up. You don't have to create some new account. You just grab it. You're done. That opens up a lot of possibilities for devs. Or what about, you know, people like us? You know, let's say we made a show. We made a show that was just for Android, just about Android,
right,
and you get it downloaded directly to your Android phone. A $1 a month thing, the app or video gets downloaded right away. It's a lot of options. So I like that Amazon's getting into this because they know how to do the stores. They know how to make it so it's flexible and good for both consumers and the people selling the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Google, they're huge and they've sold a lot, but they don't really know that market. They don't seem have that thing down.
They don't have the whole human connection thing down.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazon knows how to deal with customers.
They know
on a one-to-one basis.
To the point where everyone feels good, for the most part, buying stuff from Amazon.
Dude, you've seen how much S I get from Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
An Amazon dude.
You have a hallway filled with Amazon boxes. You buy, like, toilet paper from Amazon.
I would. I buy paper towels. Diapers. Awesome.
Yeah?
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Everything, anything in bulk like that, it's great.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see where they go with this. And, you know, obviously once they release something, I'm going to blow it on my phone and try it out.
You sure are.
All right, Brian. Well, that's all the news for this week.
So today is 10-10. Which means Ubuntu 10.10 is out. We in fact started recording at 10.10 at 10 a.m., which...
I know, right?
Is that the exact launch time for Ubuntu 10.10?
I don't think it was technically the exact, but it was...
It should have been.
It's like right in there, dude.
It's like the spiritual launch time.
It was the spiritual launch time.
10 a.m. Pacific, because honestly, come on. That's where everything happens, is on the west coast of America.
Yeah, we're always known as the hub. So, Ubuntu 10.10's out.
It's out.
The Maverick.
Today, right now. Right now, go to Ubuntu.com where you can grab it. We've obviously been running it for a while.
Yeah.
We're upgraded to the latest and greatest. We're using the release version. And we're going to give you the full-on review. After we give you the review, we're going to be talking to one of the editors and writers over at omgubuntu.com.
Good time.
To talk about kind of their take and the community's take on it. But for now, let's dive in. What do you think? Just general. Gut reaction.
Gut reaction?
10-10.
Good. My gut reaction is real good.
Not total crap?
No. My gut reaction is I've installed it on two different systems that I've used in my daily production. My main desktop, my main workhorse workstation,
yep,
and a little crappy extra MacBook that I inherited. You know, one of the Intel units. It's not like super old, but it's definitely not the latest. It's one of the acrylic units, and I thought, well, I'll try Ubuntu on there. It came loaded with OS 10.5, and I didn't want to run that. So I thought I'll put Ubuntu on there. I mean, flawless execution.
Yeah.
Just the only thing that doesn't work is the iSight webcam, and that's because there's some funky Apple firmware stuff going on there.
Yeah, that's fine.
But, you know, sleep, zero problems. Hibernation, zero problems. Wireless, Ethernet, everything. 3D acceleration, just perfect.
Everything works.
And on my main workstation, my workhorse is a dual monitor setup. And in the past, I have always had issues with that second monitor being plugged in. Sometimes the system wouldn't even load X.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just not usable. This time, system boots up. That second screen isn't turned on right away, and I'm sure I could make a permanent workaround for this, but if I just open up the NVIDIA control panel, hit apply, it's on, and it stays on until my next reboot.
Well, that's not bad.
That's the only workaround thing that I've had to do for all of this in the entire time.
Bad, really.
No, no, I really don't mind that.
Yeah, that's not terrible. I mean, yeah, if I, you know, you probably want to make that work just right, because come on, we're making it work just right is important.
Son Goku in the chat room asks, how's the multi-touch on this MacBook under Ubuntu? And it's you could probably speak better to the whole multi-touch aspect touch, but you know, I do get like two-finger scrolling and stuff like that on this guy.
Yep.
So that works.
So now I've been playing around a little bit with multi-touch. We don't really have massive multi-touch in Ubuntu 10.10. So the thing is, it's gotten a lot of hype. I've got the touch screen tablet down there that has multi-touch support on it.
We've read that a few episodes ago.
And it's great. It works great. And in fact, Ubuntu 10.10 out of the box, the touch screen works.
The
webcam works, the wireless works, the 3D acceleration works, everything works. There is nothing that doesn't work out
of
the box.
That's nice.
I should preface that. I have to use the restricted drivers for the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, as I do with my NVIDIA card.
I consider that out of the box. If you can one click
and
it says, hey, do you want Wi-Fi? And you say yes, and then you get Wi-Fi, that's out of the box.
Agreed.
You know, that's not really a workaround. That's perfect. So that's the only thing, though, is that there's not a lot of multi-touch. So you know, you can click and drag all your windows around and click to interact with your screen and just tap in the touch screen.
When I saw it was really slick.
It's really slick. It's really smooth. The precision is perfect. The multi-touch isn't really there yet. You can go and install
Zoom or what are we talking?
Zoom, right clicking, click hold. Basically, the gestures are not fully baked in yet. You can go and install them. You can go and install all the multi-touch stuff. There's a PPA for it.
So they have actions for different types. They're just not done yet.
They're just not really there yet. And they'll get there. They will.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm sure we'll see a lot more of them included as time goes on. But if you want them right now, you can get them. They're a little bit beta-ish, in my opinion.
Oh, okay.
But they're not all there out of the box.
So this new version of Ubuntu, one of the things that I think we've both noticed is really, really great power management. And this one, Ubuntu is shipping with 2.6.35, I believe, which means that... I feel like this has been one of these things they've said forever, but this is finally supposed to be one of those things where it's going to stop pulling your hardware as much and save battery power. I probably get about 3.5-4 hours on this MacBook. I don't know. I actually don't really run unplugged. I have so many plugs that I don't really run unplugged that often. But I think I've gone 3 to 4 hours before I've plugged in again. Just that I stopped around there. I don't know if it would have kept going.
Hey, that's great, Chris. Ask me how much battery life I get
under
Ubuntu 10.10 on the Lenovo S10 3T netbook/tablet.
Tell me.
About 9.5 hours.
There you go. And that's, you got the 8 cell on there, right?
Yeah, it's a big, giant Hurricane 8 cell extended battery that acts like a giant handle. But yeah, I get about 9.5 hours.
Super.
By the way, Ubuntu reports it as having about 5.5 hours of battery life available when you first start using it. It goes down to about 3, where it stays until it actually is 3 remaining. So many, many hours, and then it tanks off.
What I like is if you look over at the power menu in GNOME, they have some really interesting power charts to help you sort of diagnose your charge profile, like maybe any particular battery capacity issues or how frequently you start to discharge and then charge back up again. And if you look at you can also look at how accurate it was at guessing your charge, which is kind of what you were talking about. Yeah. And mine's still jumping around a bit. It takes a little while to get
mine's all over the map. Mine's just never right. It can't figure it out. It's almost like Ubuntu, the whole system sees the battery and it's like, that can't be right.
Yeah.
That's not possible to get that much battery life. And it just assumes I'm going to get less.
I think that does actually happen. So that's a GNOME feature. This version of Ubuntu is also rocking GNOME 2.32, which includes improved power management.
It sure does.
Tied in with that nice new kernel that Ubuntu 10.10 shipping with, you're going to get those features. So while, you know, you can't really say that it's Ubuntu that's bringing you the new GNOME, because all the distros are going to do that. I think that that polish of bringing it all together, there's something untangible there that's more than just taking a release package and including it in your distro. There's that extra level that Ubuntu goes. Even if it's something small that they're doing, it really all feels tightly integrated.
Yeah. You know, overall, it seems really good. I mean, even things like you know, the Ubuntu Me social network menu, it's there just like it was in 10.04. It's a little more polished now. That's great. The volume control panel now has integration with RhythmBox.
Oh my gosh! And if you install a plugin, which I got working, sir, and if you install a plugin, you also Banshee. Get Banshee in there,
which you have to do. So that works fantastically well. So out of the box, honestly, this feels like a more cohesive package than you get with either, say, Windows or OS X.
Oh, currently. Way more.
Which really. Kind of blows me away that we're at the point now where we're looking at having a simple, easy-to-use package.
If you're watching the audio version, if I'm holding over my volume control now, and there's a Banshee player controls built into the
right
volume
there.
Control menu. That the album artwork, the track title that's playing, all that kind
now
of
that,
stuff.
Now, that's not by default, though.
No,
by
not for Banshee.
By default, it comes with RhythmBox, but the plugin for Banshee is easy enough to install on there. It's fantastic. And honestly, here's the thing. After installing Ubuntu 10.10. I love it, with some exceptions for certain apps that I immediately install three applications to replace what's on 10.10.
Banshee.
F-Spot. Well, Banshee, F-Spot to replace Shotwell, and Dropbox to install to replace Ubuntu 1.
I tried Ubuntu 1, and Ubuntu 1, even for free, you get 2 gigs. But right now, it's only syncing your bookmarks if you have a Firefox plugin.
Right.
And I'm using Chrome. It's synchronizing your contacts. Cool, except for I'm using Evolution now has support for Google Contacts, and I'm using that to synchronize my contacts, so don't need Contact Sync.
Yep.
And I don't believe there's much else in the way of what it actually sync on your desktop yet. There's like one or two other small things.
And you know, the interesting thing is I'm kind of a big user of Conduit.
Which
Conduit basically allows you, if you haven't checked out Conduit, it allows you to basically kind of sync anything to anything.
Pipe data from one app to another.
So if you want to have all of your notes continuously from Tomboy piped out to files, it's easy enough to do. And then I have all those files dumped on my little Dropbox.
I love
folder.
Conduit. That's cool. And you're then, still using it.
It's a great app. So I don't really need Ubuntu 1. They obviously made some improvements in Ubuntu 1. Ubuntu 1 looks nice. I tested it out. It worked well.
Yep.
But I'm such a diehard Dropbox user at this point that migrating to Ubuntu 1 would be painful.
That's
for
my
me.
Situation too.
If they continue on their current track, if they keep adding stuff, more stuff to the Ubuntu 1 store, they add more support, more features, more syncing, I'm going to be hard-pressed to stick with Dropbox and not jump over to Ubuntu 1.
I absolutely feel the same way. I don't feel like Ubuntu 1 is there yet.
Not for me.
And I think the unfortunate aspect of that is I feel that Ubuntu 1 has been a heavily touted feature of 10.10. Like, they're really talking up the cloud integration of it.
Yep.
And it's just not there for me at the moment, though I already see it.
It's so close.
Yep, I see that.
So close.
Really, the big thing that we haven't talked about yet in Ubuntu 10.10 is the new software center.
I should mention, the chat room just reminded me, I do also replace Firefox with Chromium.
Yeah.
I immediately hop in, install Chromium, and uninstall Firefox.
Have you tried the new sync feature in Chrome? It's amazing. So you install Chrome. And you log in with your sync credentials, and within 15 seconds, everything about Chrome is exactly
as
it was.
I think that's only Chrome. I don't think that works in Chrome.
No, it's Chrome. I'm running Chromium.
And it still works?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It might be a recent Chromium thing, but this is from the repo.
Oh, okay.
And, everything. All your extensions, all that stuff. So that's
I should give it
nice.
A try.
Yeah.
I should give it a try. That would be really, really cool.
I got to say, Chromium.
Great browser.
Just amazing. There is no better browser under Linux. There's just no better browser.
It's great.
It is really great.
It's really great.
So let's talk about the Software Center, because you and I had a whole episode dedicated to the Software Center where we kind of got a little mean.
We kind of
were a little anti-Software Center.
Well, it's not that we're anti-Software Center. It's that we're really pro-Software Center, and we just want to see a few things done.
And okay, so can we let's talk about what I think they got right.
Yes.
I like the featured section.
Oh, I love it. It's very out of the way, but yet handy. It's similar if you've used, iTunes and the App Store and all those sorts of things. It's the same basic thing. It's a little scrolling kind of list of all the apps that they're featuring or are new or are
highlighted. What would be awesome is if it could tie in with my repo database and only show me the featured applications I don't have installed. For example, Cheese came pre-installed with Ubuntu. Or at least I think it did. Maybe I installed it.
I installed it.
So
it wasn't pre-installed for
me. Oh, okay, okay. But once I've installed something,
it shouldn't. I don't need it to show.
I know that they just have to connect that up,
Yeah.
But that would be nice. And then also, I'd like to see, and maybe this will happen, some variation in what's featured, because I don't believe what's featured has changed since I started reviewing Ubuntu. I believe it's been the same featured content.
And honestly, I don't see it changing anytime soon all that much until they get a lot more of the third-party application support.
Somebody in my BuzzFeed, you know, I threw the news stories for this week's episode in Buzz like I always do, and somebody said, hey, you know that Pengu game site that I was showing?
Yeah.
That is a directory that should be built into the Ubuntu Software Center.
That is just something
that should be in there. And so, if you go here on the side to available for purchase, right? What do they call that? Yeah, for purchase. The only thing still in there is the Fluendo DVD player.
Yeah. Not even the Fluendo codec pack. No. Just the DVD player. That's the only thing available in this store for purchase in the Ubuntu Software Center. And I'm going to be straight. That is my only negative thing to say.
We did a whole episode on it, so we won't spend a lot of time on that. I really think the Software Center is probably one of the better UIs for finding and loading software.
Yes.
One of the things that is such a big deal that I really like this time going through setting up both my systems, click to install, cues the install in the background, and you can just keep browsing as it installs.
Now, I have noticed it can slow the system down a bit. You know,
I've had it fail on me, too.
I've had it fail once, but for the most part, it's been pretty rock solid, and it does chug because you're installing software while you're browsing for more software.
Yeah.
So there could be a better way to do that. There, it could be cool if you queued it up, but honestly, that might get a little more confusing for end users. So I kind of like how they did it. I've decided I like how they did it.
I would like to see It just seems like 2010, almost 2011, it isn't the time to build a Python GTK looking application. It's time to build maybe a nice web UI with a daemon that runs on your desktop, maybe through Ubuntu One, that is a push install just like Android applications. So on Android, even when you're browsing the marketplace, when you hit install, you're actually triggering a push command from the Google Marketplace servers to push that application to you.
Right.
And so when they turn on the Android web marketplace, that functionality is going to be the same when you're browsing through the web. Canonical could have a web-based store, so anyone who's not even running Ubuntu could peruse it to see if that's something they might be interested in. And then when you install it, it could connect to like the Ubuntu One daemon running on your system and do an apt-get push command right there.
Oh, maybe there's something to that.
That would be nice because maybe people could extend that so you could push entire software packages to workstations. I'm really trying to think of how to scale Ubuntu 10.10 as a desktop across a lot of machines, and that's one of the areas that's coming up short for me is software management.
That would be nice. That would be really, really nice for sure.
Yeah.
For me, honestly, the only thing in the store and in the whole app center is it comes down to there's only one app for purchase.
Yeah,
there's and I talked with Canonical about it. You know, they're obviously interested in bringing in a lot more third party commercial applications, like Illumination Software Creator. I was pushing them on it. I'm like, I really want to get this in there because, and I said this on a past episode, if I don't have stuff in there at launch, I was never going to hear the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
I tried. They're not interested in having in new applications at this time. They're not ready for it. It sounds like that's going to happen quickly before the next Ubuntu release.
I should. There's no reason to wait.
They're talking about, and this is somewhat unofficial because this is just conversations I've been having with individuals at Canonical.
Okay.
They're interested over the next few months rolling out more and more applications into the App Center.
That makes sense.
For purchase.
They have limited resources they have to focus, I understand. I would have been cool if they could have done the new Software Center and then just done like a point rev and just turned on the store with apps in it.
I kind of would have liked that as well.
Yeah.
I mean, they always do the point revisions anyway. Why not kind of just roll that into it? I think that would have been better. Or just have a couple more apps in there or a few games or something. Just something.
Even free
that,
stuff.
You know, yeah. Well, in the purchase side of things. Because if you go into the for purchase, there's only one. And that just makes you cock your head to the side and go, really? Just one? Because then you've got just this little tiny entry at the top of the list. And it's kind of almost comical.
I don't want to go too far in this, but I go back into that. I almost don't even like separating free from commercial. It kind of still sets like this segregation kind of.
Totally.
This software isn't as holy as the other software kind of a thing.
I think that's the purpose, though.
Okay.
I agree with you, but what are you going to do?
Yeah.
I actually, on the Linux side, this is horrible. I prefer it because on the Linux side of things,
it does kind of help find it.
There's not a lot of commercial software.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, if you go to my website, I have a page up there that's just for here's commercial software I've been able to find. there's only really like 30 or 40.
So it kind of gives you more exclusive placement in a way.
It gives you really exclusive placement.
I'm down.
I mean, if you're a game developer, like Hothead Games up in Vancouver, British Columbia,
yeah.
They make like 4 games, I think, for Linux, or 3, or they make a couple. The Penny Arcade games I know are for Linux.
Yep.
So there's not a whole lot of commercial Linux games. There are plenty,
yeah.
But there's not a ton.
Yeah.
So
true.
They make a significant percentage of them, which
that's a good point.
Helps out their sales.
Yeah. I mean, see what you're saying.
I kind of dig that.
Now, we touched on it real quick. The Me menu, it integrates in with your email, Twitter, and using Gwibber, it gets in with all sorts of different services.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that I think is really right about Gwibber integration and the Me menu and all of that stuff is that it's one menu entry, and you click it, and you've got your contacts, you've got your email, you've got your broadcast accounts, but also, at least in the current set of settings, the default settings, when I get a new instant message or somebody replies to an instant message, instead of flashing down there in my tray like some sort of crazed, attention-demanding beast, I just get a nice little green icon up in my tray that says, you have a new message. No flashing, no harassment.
It's
just
really calm. It's like it's soothing to get messages.
Like, by the way, when you're ready to click here, there's going to be something in this menu for you.
Yeah. You get a new email. You get a new instant message. You get a new Facebook mention. You get, you get a new Twitter retweet. Yep. Oh, something happened, and it's just for you.
When you're ready.
It feels good.
Go ahead and click it.
It feels like a treat now.
I know.
Instead of me feeling like, oh my God, I got work to do, it feels like a treat.
Honestly?
I get to interact with the world now.
Honestly, I know that sounds like I'm a mental case, but that's truly honestly how I feel.
I feel the exact same
way. That's funny, because it's such a small thing, and it is a paradigm shift in my interaction with all of those things.
Yeah.
My interaction level has gone way up.
Way up.
Yeah.
Me too. Like, I was kind of like dropping off on like the Facebook and the Twitter.
It's too demanding.
Honestly, on a lot of my email too, I will wait and I'll go through it later. But I just glance over there. Hello, Brian.
How you doing, Brian?
Yeah. People want to talk to you, but only when you're ready. And I love that.
Before we get, is Brandon, right? Before we get Brandon on the show, is there anything else you want to cover on the 10.10?
No, overall, I liked it. It's a stable release. It's good. Honestly, I don't really see a lot of reason to stay with 10.04, the long-term support, unless you're in like a big organization and you need the long-term support. Honestly, move to 10.10.
And at the same time, though, I don't know what I would point to and say, you've got to get this feature.
I think just overall, if you're a nerdy person, you're going to move to 10.10. Yeah. I don't see any reason not to. I don't see any reason to wait.
I'd still like to see in the next release, I'd like to see something from Canonical that says this is Ubuntu and this is why Ubuntu is going to be king for a while.
Yeah.
Because right now I'm seeing, man, this is a great desktop. And that is awesome. And I'm glad we're at this point.
It's a great desktop.
It's like, meh. So the desktop's awesome. That's where we're at now. And that's great.
Yep.
But I'm ready to be like, oh my gosh, everybody run out, go do a disk upgrade, go get your free CD for 10.10 because it's going to let you do. I don't have that. I don't have that answer. So my review is great release, not super compelling, but I think it lays like with the software center, with the excellent execution on power management and all that stuff, it does set a standard for usability.
It does.
Definitely sets.
It really does. And one other thing I wanted to point out, you'll notice, and with most of our reviews that we've done for a lot of Linux distros, we start out by saying, oh my gosh, it's ugly. Or, oh my gosh, default theme sucks.
Yeah.
You notice we didn't even mention it.
Yeah, it's true.
We dove right in. And why? Because it looks good.
It does.
And it looked good in 10.04. It's minorly polished in 10.10. It looks good.
You know, for the most part, I think
I have a couple of quibbles. The icons still feel unfinished. Like half of the icons are purple, half of the icons are orange.
Yeah.
Honestly, purple and orange are not good together, guys. Get rid of the remaining orange. Just get rid of it. It's come on. You know, pick a color theme here and go with it.
Yeah, I can see.
But otherwise, honestly, they all look good. Everything's high quality. The default themes and backgrounds, they look good. It's great. They did a nice job with it. Even with Ubuntu One integration into Nautilus, there's a couple of spots where you're like, hey, if you have Ubuntu One, you could sync this folder.
You could right-click on this folder
just
right here.
Just check this checkbox, and you're gonna be syncing this.
Yep.
The way they integrated it, it looks nice. It's pleasant. It's not too obstruction-y. It's not obtrusive. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, I could do that if I wanted to.
And I'll say
and
this.
It feels good.
A closing thought here on the Software Center. I have found new software through it that I have never tried before. And I think that's not one of the best compliments you can say for that new software center. I don't know what is. This program here that I've seen mentioned before, but actually seen screenshots and reading about it. You know, I finally went out, downloaded it. It ties in with Nautilus. I can right-click on a video file and just say, hey, transcode this for my HTC Evo.
It works great.
It's neat. And
it's amazing.
The way they feature stuff now in the software center really does help find it, so I hope they keep that current.
Phenomenal. Now, if you're using another Linux distro, if you're using SUSE, if you're using Fedora or Mint or something, honestly, is Ubuntu 10.10 the one that you should move to? I'm not going to say that straight up. Honestly, if you're using Fedora, yeah, you really should upgrade to 10.10. But realistically, there are some great distros out there right now. We're going to be reviewing a lot of stuff going out through the season. We're going to be doing a review of Arch, which is a whole different deal. You know what I mean? It's a whole different way of looking at Linux. So
I'm excited to try it.
Ubuntu may not be the Linux for you, but honestly, it's the best Linux out of the box for the average person. My second tier right now, in that regard, would be OpenSUSE. OpenSUSE is great, and honestly, if OpenSUSE's various tools like the build service and the SUSE Studio and all the other great tools that
you get that tied in nice and tight,
if they had that with some of the really cool social integration and desktop integration features that Ubuntu has, that would be impossible.
Yeah, because you could see SUSE's challenge would be there could be so much cool stuff in the build service. And now you need to highlight and feature that.
Right. So they really, really, Ubuntu's got like half of the equation figured out down. Stuff that Windows and Apple and Microsoft have not figured this stuff out yet. They just haven't.
Right.
So Ubuntu's got it down. Huge kudos to the Ubuntu team. Now there's a lot of other projects out there that have kind of got the other half figured out. The side of things for rolling out customized distros for your whole corporation, doing all those sorts of really cool things. Those aren't really on the Ubuntu side of things. If those features came to Ubuntu, I really don't see what would stop Ubuntu from complete and total world domination at that point. There's not really there's no real wall there blocking them from destroying everything and just taking everything over.
Don't discount Puppy Linux yet, sir.
You just made fun of Puppy Linux. Poor Puppy.
I actually have a real soft spot for Puppy, so they're just my go-to.
Puppy's cute. Yeah, everyone likes a little Puppy. But anyway, it's great. If you're an Ubuntu user, you're going to upgrade. You should upgrade. I did a clean install on one. It worked great. I did a dist upgrade from 10.04. It worked.
The dist upgrade is an officially supported upgrade feature.
Have any problems with it, but I'm still always nervous about it.
Me too.
So
plus
honestly,
with things like Dropbox and all that stuff, why not just reload?
The machine I dist upgraded, I'm probably going to wipe it out and reinstall clean for no reason.
Other than if it's ever weird, you're always like, is this because I upgraded?
Exactly. Yeah, so I'm probably going to do that. Is this the best Linux we've ever had? In terms of just a pure desktop release for consumers, I would say yes.
Yeah. Wow. You know, I hadn't thought of it like that, but I can't think of as a pure desktop experience that I would be comfortable handing to. You know what Ubuntu 10.10 is? It is the ultimate Windows XP killer. Maybe.
Yeah.
Because there's people on XP don't want to go to Vista or 7. They just don't want to do it. You throw this on here, you're going to get as good a performance, if not better than XP. It's not, 7 or Vista is not going to run that good, period, on that hardware, on old hardware like that. You could put 10.10 on there, free. They get a modern operating system, great performance, great security. This might be the ultimate operating system to move your family members from if you're still on XP. If you're going places this holiday and they're on XP, load 10.10.
And if I would completely agree with that. I would say if you're looking to put up a home server or put out your own, you're an IT administrator and you're looking to roll out your organization, I would more go towards OpenSUSE or some of the other solutions available. But for it's just reinstalling a machine at home as a desktop, Ubuntu 10.10 is currently the king.
I'm down with you, dude. All right, everyone. Well, that's our look at Ubuntu 10.10.
The netbook.
Oh.
We almost forgot the netbook.
So you tried the netbook? Because I didn't try the netbook.
Absolutely.
Unity,
all
right.
Unity. So this is the whole new netbook remix. Here, let me pull something up here in case... let me bring up a screenshot here. All right, so...
What do you think, dude?
Oh, are you joking with me?
You like it?
It is fantastic.
Really?
They did a great job.
I thought you maybe wouldn't like it.
And I immediately stopped using it.
Oh, really?
It's phenomenal. It looks great. It's easy to use. It's really, really, it's just an easy set of application launchers and tools on top of Ubuntu.
That's kind of what I thought, and that's why it wasn't compelling for me.
I thought, you know what? Now I'm using the touchscreen on my Lenovo tablet. Sure. I use it a lot.
Sure. Okay. So the larger buttons and stuff.
The larger buttons more optimized for finger touching. And honestly, you know what? It was much easier. But it's not that I really had problems with the standard Ubuntu, menus anyway. So I stuck with it for a while. It was a really cool. It looked cool. It worked well. It was fast. Honestly, people saw it and they said, "Whoa, that looks cool."
Right.
And it does look cool. It's great. They did an amazing job on this.
I agree.
It is definitely the best of the netbook / tablet.
It's got a very
UI
docky
I've
thing
seen.
Going on its side.
It does. And I really like it. They did a great job. They put things in the right spots. They did a great job. I have nothing bad to say about it, but I still don't fully see the need for it. You know, it's the standard GNOME UI is pretty compact. It's pretty minimalized.
And you're using it on a touchscreen.
And I'm using it on a touchscreen. I don't see the need for the Netbook Remix. But if you do want something that's optimized for a tablet or a netbook, it is great. Try out Unity, Ubuntu Netbook Remix. It's fantastic. It works great.
Before we wrap, we should also say we didn't get a chance to really try it. Or did you? I didn't get a chance. I didn't load Kubuntu.
I did not load Kubuntu.
I do plan to loop back eventually, but not till after I've checked a few other things off my list.
I tried Kubuntu during the alpha period, but come on, that was alpha.
Yeah.
It doesn't count. It was pretty buggy, but honestly, it was alpha, and it looked like it was going to be
doesn't
good.
Count, Brian. Just like that night you doesn't made out count. With that dude. All right, everyone. That's our look at Ubuntu 10.10.
All right, so we've done a review of Ubuntu 10.10, and it was epic and awesome.
Good job, dude.
And here's why. Because we're awesome.
But why are we wearing these stupid headphones?
We got these stupid headphones, for those watching the video version on, because we thought it would be cool to bring on someone from the outside. Someone not from the inner sanctum of Jupiter Broadcasting and the Linux Action Show.
Those people exist?
To give their viewpoint on how Ubuntu 10.10 shaped up, how it's going to impact the community, how it's going to change the world.
That's a lot of things.
And we thought, you know what? Who better to do that than one of the writers from over at OMG! Ubuntu! .co.uk. UK.edu.gb.whatever.
Not quite.
And so we have with us Benjamin Humphrey from OMG Ubuntu. Take a bow, Benjamin.
Hey, how's it going?
Welcome to the show.
So yeah, it's like 7:30 in the morning in New Zealand.
Whoa.
On Monday.
Nice job.
That's like
man.
4 a.m. Well, I actually want to tell
minute,
you
wait
something.
Wait a minute. On Monday?
Yeah. On Monday.
I'm in the future right now.
No. It's Sunday right now. you don't understand.
That's not how it works.
Yeah, no. It's Sunday at like 11.
I'm excited to have Benjamin on the show because I'm a big fan of OMG Ubuntu or Oh My God Ubuntu. So Benjamin, since we got you on the phone on 10.10 for 10.10, we thought, well, I guess now it's 10.11 for you. We thought, though, we should get your opinion on the new Ubuntu release.
Yeah, okay. So right.
So what'd you think, man?
I've been running Ubuntu for like 3 months, the Maverick, since Alpha or something. And I mean, Maverick is awesome. You know, it's that extra little bit of consistency that I think Ubuntu really needed. Mm-hmm. The new themes that were introduced in 10.04 back in April, they mm-hmm. have sort of, the design team have been working on them and they've sort of evolved into something that looks really good now, I reckon. And you've got this whole app indicator stuff going on in the panel up on the top right and a new wallpaper and stuff and all these lovely colors and things coming through, and it just looks like a consistent, beautiful operating system.
Yeah, very consistent, very polished. That's a good way to sum up sort of my feelings on
it. So now do you have any clue why half of the icons are purple and half of them are orange? And seriously, orange and purple, it looks ridiculous. Now, I'm not trying to make fun of OMG Ubuntu's top of their website where it's purple and orange, but seriously, purple and orange, what's going on? Can you possibly go hit someone over at Canonical for me that would change that so it's not both colors?
You know, the two colors they chose for the new branding, the aubergine and the orange, they're actually on opposite sides of a color wheel, like perfectly, so they're actually, from a design point of view, they are perfect. Perfect complement colors.
That's not the answer you wanted.
No, that's not good at all.
I mean, I think a lot of people are just like, anything's better than brown.
That's true. Yeah. Orange and brown was pretty epic bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how have your experiences been and the audience of OMG Ubuntu? Are you hearing any feedback from your readers on what they're kind of
I don't know,
players?
Like, we could tell anything to our readers, and I think they just love it.
Yeah, probably the people that are reading Oh My God Ubuntu are probably Ubuntu fans.
You know, it's interesting. We actually have a show on Jupiter Broadcasting called Brian and Chris Just Fart Into a Microphone, and people watch that every week.
Yeah, huge
it's
ratings.
It's ridiculous.
We've recently taken it live. Which means we have to be a little more on the spot, but we seem to manage.
Yeah, it's not that bad. So what you're saying is you guys over at OMG Ubuntu just kind of fart words out onto a page and do a terrible job, just totally half-assed, and everyone loves it.
Yeah. I mean, we just you know, pick things out of a hat, really, and we look outside the window and choose some stuff to write about.
I'm just joshing.
Do you guys see
you guys actually have probably one of the best kind of Linux-y news review sites out there. You guys put a lot of polish into it. The site looks great, and you know, more importantly, like the posts that you put up, you guys put a lot of great quality into it. I just want to kind of give you a little bit of a little pat on the head and say good dog.
There's
you guys have done a great job.
A good 10 things to do after installing Ubuntu 10.10 article up on their site right now. I like that. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
because it's totally riding the wave of my excitement. I just got my new OS installed. Now I want to go see what I can do with it, that kind of thing. So I like that. You guys see a big
You guys are trying to get onto Digg's front page with that one.
That is a good one. Benjamin, do you guys see a big jump in traffic around the release days like this?
Oh, man. It spikes hugely. Like, I think our release post got tweeted a couple of hundred times or something and stumbled and stuff like that. So we get a ton of traffic, which means we really have to be on our game when it comes to the release day and a couple of days afterwards.
Benjamin, one of the things that we've been really hard on, well, not really hard on, but we've been outspoken on is the new software center and kind of how the for pay area is a little bit of an underperformer. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do actually. So the software center is like really cool. It's an excellent idea. I think it's awesome how they're trying to bring this whole idea of paid apps and stuff to the desktop, something that Windows and OS X doesn't have. And,
right.
Something that's been it's proven successful on Android, and you've got it on the iOS for a couple of years.
But
now,
haven't really seen it done well on a or pretty much at all, at least directly from a manufacturer on the desktop.
Except for the Linspire side of things.
Click and run. Click and run. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I mean, that's the whole cool thing about Linux in general, is that you've got this package management system which can deliver stuff right to your desktop, updates and everything. And so I think the software center is good. Like, they should have utilized that ages ago, and now they're just slowly building in. But I totally agree with you in the fact that launching with like one application in the software center is a bit of a letdown. It's like, oh,
yeah,
you know, we've got this whole new functionality, and then you've got like a DVD player. Like $40.
Right. Seriously. Okay, good. I'm glad that you sort of are echoing that with us, because I felt like maybe we were being a little hard on them. And it just seems like, because it is one of the first, not the first, but one of the first desktop store software centers, you know, where you can buy desktop applications on a computer, not like through a mobile device. It does seem like maybe there was a little more attention on it because of that.
Yeah.
And
it really does.
Yeah. Okay.
I've been talking with some really nice guys in the Canonical team that are handling the whole software thing, and I've been talking to them because over at OMG we've been the parent company that we own has been working on some software to sell some cool games and stuff like that, tie into our websites and things like that, and so I've been talking with them, and they're pretty keen to get that sort of stuff in the software center like in the next couple of months, which should be cool. So we're looking at they also said they've got a whole bunch of apps queued up and stuff, so I'm definitely confident that by Christmas that list should start to sort of fill up.
We can sure only hope so. I mean, that's kind of the general consensus that I've gotten as well. But man, it's hard. Until we have it out there, people are going to point to the store side of it, and they're gonna kind of make fun of us.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm really hoping that happens sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
Yeah, definitely. I guess it's another thing which is probably needs work on that side is the whole approval process for paid apps. Like, I think developers have to set up a PPA and all this sort of stuff, and from what I've heard, some of our developers, setting up a PPA can be a bit of a nightmare sometimes.
Sure. I mean, it's much, much more I mean, for some people, it's going to be a slam dunk, but for some people, it's much more complicated than just submitting an app to an app store.
Yeah, and currently, there's no real, like, approval process for the paid apps, really. I mean, it's just kind of winging it. You know, you just kind of get in contact with them. There's no, like, there's not even, like, a link on their website that says,
how to get
make commercial software, contact us here. You know, you have to basically know, I know I can get in contact with people, and you just start talking to people until you find the right people.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, the person I talked to, I just, like, sent him a message on Facebook. I mean, it's a pretty random way to get in touch with a company if you want to publish it.
Highly random. Mm-hmm. Super random. But I think they know that, right? You know, it sounds like they know it's kind of cowboyed from the hip, just kind of winging it for the moment. And, honestly, they don't even have, like, a default, like, payment thing set up, like, where it's like, you know, there's, like, a 70-30 split or something.
There's a lot of details they still have to work out.
They're really kind of figuring it out as they go, yeah.
I think, yeah, you're right. They definitely know that. Like, I think they're just happy to have that infrastructure in place on release.
Yep.
In the last 6 months and then sort of building it from here.
So, it almost sounds like the whole infrastructure isn't quite fully in place yet. No, maybe that's part of the delay.
No, they're missing a few pieces, but they know it, and they have come a long way in the last 6 months. Mm-hmm. So I look at that, and I'm like, you know what? If they came that far in 6 months, you know, in the next 4 to 6 months, that should be enough time to kind of finish it up if they keep going at the same speed.
True that.
So then I'll be happy.
I hear you.
Yeah, definitely.
Benjamin, any closing thoughts on the new release before we hang up on your face?
I just wanted to mention the new font as well that you guys...
Oh, thank you!
That's right.
Yes!
Yeah, the new font, so Canonical contracted Bruno Marg font typefaces, designers in England.
They're fantastic. They are.
And so they did this excellent job. I got to meet Bruno Marg at UDS, which was a developer summit about 6 months ago. Really cool guy, and he was like totally psyched about this new font that they're working on, and they've got it in a whole bunch of variants, like light, regular, different languages, bold, that sort of stuff.
It's caught my eye a few times, and every time I've stopped and gone, I like that. And also, it almost has some elements, like in the, in the J and the M and the P, it almost looks kind of Star Trek fonty in a way.
Great.
And so, like, when I've been instant messaging you, I'll pause every now and then before I send the instant message and go, I really like that font.
Yeah. It's a nice one.
Yeah,
scales really well
as
well.
Yeah.
It does. It's really high quality.
We're showing a picture of it in the video version right now, and it's real clean and crisp. I really like it.
You know,
I'm glad you remember
that. That's true. I usually don't mention it, but I hate the fonts on every desktop, so I usually end up going to like Blambot, which has great free fonts, and so I'll go there, find fonts I want for my system, download them, and just replace everything. Yep. But now I realize with 10.10, I actually haven't done that yet.
The exception of my background, I haven't even changed my default theme.
That's the same as me as well. Like normally, I just change the theme and stuff like that. This time, I've got the Radiance theme going, and the only thing I've done is remove the bottom panel and install Docky instead.
Yeah.
And,
that's interesting. There's been a few people in the chat room today that have mentioned they're running Docky as well.
Yeah, I'm not doing the Docky, but I got rid of the bottom panel right away, and that's really about only major
I did on my other
I've
machine.
Made, yeah.
I've kind of gotten used to the two-panel system now. On my other machine, I did just one bottom panel and not a top panel. It's fun to be able to experiment, but I really am liking the defaults these days. All right, Benjamin.
Yeah.
Well, you know what?
All right.
Thanks for joining us on the Linux Action Show. Great work on the site. It's quickly becoming one of the go-to sites that I check before we always do an episode to make sure I don't miss anything in the...
That website again, omgubuntu.co.edu.uk.gb.
Maybe we'll just put a link in the show notes.
Seriously, so it would be really cool if one time you guys could get a real domain name.
Oh, it's not that
bad. I just need to plug another site we launched recently.
You bet.
UbuntuGamer.com.
It's
a brand new site that we launched a couple of weeks ago, and it's targeted at games on Ubuntu. So
is that so? UbuntuGamer.com, huh?
Yeah, right, .com. We got a real domain name this time.
And with the .com.
I like the .com-iness. Nice.
That passes Brian.
Stepping into the 20th century.
That's
there.
The Brian sniff test, huh? If it's got the .com.
And yeah, it's down. We crashed it.
I think the chat room's going to it right now, and that's a little hard sometimes for Apache server to cope with. If we get it up here in a sec, we'll work on getting it up in between show segments.
That's all right, Brian. But
that's usually when we work on getting it up.
Thanks for coming by, taking a little time, talk to us, and do a good job. And that brings us to the end of this week's epic broadcast.
Yeah,
thank
buddy.
You. Everyone for stopping by. Oh, before we go, I want to make one quick self-plug real quick. Illumination Software Creator 2.2 is in beta right now.
Yeah.
Might actually be released by the time you watch this episode. It's scheduled for release on Monday. So
in
depending
beta,
on
Brian,
when you get it.
What's new?
The big new thing is custom blocks. So, you can develop your own software with little, graphical blocks. So now if you know Python or Java for Android or ActionScript for developing Flash apps, you can actually go in there and create your own blocks to do whatever you want for that platform. So if you want to add GPS functionality to an Android phone, you can actually create like a get GPS location block.
And in every future project, I have that block.
You have that block.
Oh, money, dude!
And what's cool is it saves each individual block as a block file, an ISB file, or an Illumination software block.
So I could send you a block?
You can send me a block. You can post 50 blocks up on your webpage. People can download those blocks, drop them into their block folder on their system. Boom. It's available in all of their projects now, too. So now if people want to expand it, now Illumination can do anything.
Here's what I'm going to do for you people out there.
Anything and everything.
I'm going to record something, and then I want you to make a block that triggers that recording playback. All right? Here you go.
Oh, yeah!
There, just make a block.
That's great. Make a block that does that. It does that.
I'll do it again for you.
You know what you
can
do?
Oh, yeah!
No, that's the second block.
There you go.
You can do two completely different blocks. Chris 1, Chris 2.
Yep.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the big new release. We were going to be adding in all sorts of stuff like iPhone support and whatnot.
Whoa,
and so the original idea of this release was going to be the iPhone release, but this one feature became so big.
Dude,
and
it's
so it's like there's actually like a little mini IDE inside of Illumination. You go in and create a new block, you bring up this whole IDE where you can say, okay, here's the code for, you know, for Python GTK options, and here's the variables to use and everything. So it's kind of epic. And so I thought, you know what, I'm not going to delay getting this out to people that I can add in another platform. So we're
releasing
another
platform
will
overshadow. That's kind of a big feature.
At radicalbreeze.com or radicalbreeze.com/forum is where everyone's talking about it. Or you can go to blog.radicalbreeze.com if the full release isn't out, and you can grab the betas there.
Cool, dude.
So anyway, that's out. Of course, it's a free upgrade because I am really great guy. If you haven't bought it yet, go buy it because it costs X monies.
Yeah.
You can buy it for X monies.
You literally can.
It is. You go to the website. There is a freaking slider. Scroll. Oh my gosh, look at a slider.
That's a slider, dude.
Hey, Chris, pick X monies.
I think I'm going to do $74.60.
Really?
Yeah, why not?
That is really nice of you.
Thank you.
Chris was a very nice guy. If you buy it for $74.60, you will get a license. You don't get anything special.
No.
But you get my gratification and the gratification of the entire Illumination Software Creator team.
Yeah, there you
anyway,
go, Brian.
So that's how
that's
it rolls.
Cool.
That's what's happening. It's totally epic awesome. Of course, you can still make Flash and Python and MAMO apps and Android apps.
Yeah.
You can make your darn Android apps without ever writing any code. And then what you can do is you can go say, somebody help me. Help me. Help me add GPS functionality or something to my Android app. And you can have them go get a copy of Illumination, create a new block for you, send you the block, boom, away you go.
I really dig the whole building via block thing. I really think that's
it's
neat.
Awesome. It's just getting epic.
I'm really excited because...
Oh, yeah, and it runs great under Ubuntu 10.10.
We've got coming up...
Oh, wait.
What?
If you go over to asusastudio.com...
Oh, yeah.
You can actually get the Illumination Software Creation Station.
The what?
The Illumination Software Creation Station, which I admit I made a mistake. When I named it, I'm like, that's a funny name.
That's a great name.
And someone pointed out to me, it would be cooler if it was the Illumination Application Creation Station.
Okay. Maybe that could be the next rev.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah.
I failed you guys.
The next one. No, you can always build more.
Still, Illumination Software Creation Station is cool all by itself.
Yeah.
Where it's basically a full version of OpenSUSE with all the requirements and Illumination built in. So you hop into it, boom, right away you've got the example projects and documentation and tutorials and the full installed project. Boom, hop in. You can grab a live CD or a VMware image. Fill up your school labs with live CDs of the Illumination Software Creation Stations. Two birds with one stone. One, Linux all throughout your school.
True that.
Two, Illumination Software Creator all
True
throughout
that.
Your school. That benefits A, mankind.
Yes.
And B, me.
Yeah.
So I like both of those things. I am very pro both mankind and Brian. So if you could do that, that would be what I like to call fantastical.
Hey, Brian, you know what else I think we're going to impact mankind with? Season 14 of the Linux Action Show.
It's going to be epic, man.
So this season,
we got so much going on.
Like in the first half of this season, I have a feeling we're going to do a gaming episode. I just feel like a Linux gaming episode is in our bones.
We have
to. You've got that new, the OMG Ubuntu guys have Ubuntu Gamer.
Yep.
We're going to have to check that out. I think that's going to make me want
you know,
a game.
We'll do.
You're running Arch.
I'm running Arch right now. You know, and like we've been saying, you know, we're going to do an Arch review, a full Arch review, not some mamby pamby. I installed Arch and it seemed to go okay. Review. I'm talking. I lived with Arch for a month.
What do you think?
And I survived to tell about it. That's the kind of review we're going to be giving here. That's going to be.
We've
epic.
Got some time. You know, the Fedora 14 release right now is slated for the 2nd of November.
Okay.
And we're recording this on the 10th of October.
We got a month.
I think we've got enough time in there to really try out Arch and give it a full review before Fedora 14 lands.
I'm running it. Well, let's do the Arch review before Fedora 14, which, by the way, running Fedora 14 right now, too.
I told the live stream, I don't know when, so I'll probably watch my Twitter feed over at twitter.com/ChrisLAS, but I'm going to do the Arch install live on the air.
Are you really?
I'm going to give it a shot.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
It actually really wasn't that bad.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I was looking at the how-to, and I thought, this is almost as long as Gen 2's how-to. This is going to be a project.
I didn't have too much of a hard time with it. I had to go search a couple of forums for a couple of things, but for the most part, it worked pretty well.
Okay.
Yeah, I really didn't have too... I'm going to save it for the thing, but
right.
I've got a lot
save
to talk about in Arch so far. A lot of good, a lot of... but so far, so good on Arch. So, yeah, we've got a lot of stuff coming up. Gaming, Arch, Fedora, all by itself.
Mm-hmm.
And we kicked the whole thing off with an Ubuntu review.
Mm-hmm.
Big season.
And I'm excited because this season we're starting to play with, if you look today on today's video edition, we had a live capture of a Linux box. And this is one of the first times we've been able to grab that in the video version to actually get live output.
Yeah.
We're actually still using Wine to do it. But I think it opens up the possibilities for more screen reviews on the show.
Yeah. Much better.
For more video capture and stuff like
Mondo awesomer. So, okay, JupiterColony.com, that's the forum. Facebook.com/JupiterBroadcasting. We just tell you about stuff in there. That's a good place to go. You can follow us on Twitter. A lot of times we'll tell you on there, too, when we remember, but sometimes we forget.
Yeah.
Because we're very, very tired sometimes.
Yeah.
But Twitter.com/BrianLundDuke
yep.
or ChrisLAS, which stands for something, apparently.
Linux Action Show.
Those are all great ways you can get a hold of us. JupiterBroadcasting.com. You can go there and do all the things. And every single Sunday, 10 a.m. Pacific
yes,
time.
Sir.
So if you're in San Francisco, or if you're in Los Angeles, or if you're in Washington, D.C. No, not Washington, D.C.
Don't screw up, everyone.
If you're in Seattle,
yeah.
maybe Portland, Oregon.
Totally Portland.
Those are time zones that we are in.
Mm-hmm.
10 a.m. in those time zones. If you are in a different time zone, do not ask us what time the show starts. We will get it wrong.
Hey, you know what? I put a converter.
I told someone... earlier today, they were like, I'm in Texas. What time's it on?
10 a.m.
It's at 10 a.m.
It's at 10 a.m.
It's at 10 a.m.
It's always at 10 a.m.
Yeah, show up at 10 a.m. They showed up at 10 a.m.
They're 10 a.m.
Yeah.
They messed it up.
What they did is they made a mistake.
Yeah.
They're wrong.
What you got to take is when we say 10 a.m., go over to JupiterBroadcasting.com/calendar, and then in there, not only do we have the calendar for every show that we do when it's live, when it releases, but there's also a time zone converter.
And that time zone converter is done by computers.
Yes.
And therefore, it is infallible. And correct.
Yes, sir.
This computer up here.
Not so good.
It does not do well.
Does not compute.
With numbers. So don't ever listen to me. If I post a little thing on Twitter, hey, everybody, Linux Action Show coming out at 10 a.m. Pacific and 14 and a half p.m. in Eastern. Don't listen to what everything after 10 a.m. Pacific is incorrect and or I am making fun of your time zone.
14 and a half.
Because you're different
than me. Don't forget about 14 and a half Pacific. You don't want to miss that.
Yeah, 14. See, it's just not going to work. So anyway, I think that's everything I could possibly tell you right now.
Hey, I wanted to say happy 42 day to everyone because that's also exciting. And thanks so much for watching this episode of the Linux Action Show. And we'll see you next week.
That's right. Ladies and gentlemen, that's how you do this stuff. This F, you just pull it on out.